Donald Trump Jr. talked about his meeting with a Russian attorney during the Sean Hannity show on Fox News last night. He said the meeting was a waste of time, that it wasn't significant, and that he did not get any opposition research that might aid the Trump campaign. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Trump Jr. told Hannity that while he was told the Russian attorney had some damaging information on Hillary Clinton, the discussion revolved around Russian adoption policy. When asked if he would have turned over any information the Russians might have obtained by hacking, Trump Jr. said absolutely. And he said if he had to do it all over again, he would have done things differently.
In retrospect, I probably would have done things a little differently. This is before the Russia mania. This is before they were building it up in the press. For me, this was opposition research. They had something. So I think I wanted to hear it out. But really, it went nowhere. And it was apparent that that wasn't what the meeting was actually about.
So was this meeting a big deal or not? Has it been handled properly or not? Is this evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government? Is this a smoking gun, so to speak? Or is it a big nothing burger, as described by White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus? We welcome your thoughts and questions and your views on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Julia Azari, an associate professor and assistant chair in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. Her research interests include the American presidency, political parties, and political rhetoric. She is a regular contributor to Vox's Mischiefs of Faction blog and 538.com. Azari is the author of Delivering the People's Message, The Changing Politics of the Presidential Mandate. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So what is your reaction as a political analyst in general to this story involving Donald Trump Jr.?
Well, so I think one of the critical things to think about is one of the big questions is there evidence that there was some knowing connection between the Trump campaign and the Russian government? That was a big question people were asking back in May and early June. And this, I think, illustrates that, you know, it's sort of a hard piece of evidence that there was. I think that there are questions about the exact nature of this, this connection and what this piece of evidence really kind of illustrates. And I guess from my perspective, it seems like we keep getting pieces of information that serve to challenge the administration's legitimacy, but not in a way that seems to prompt administration supporters to diminish that support, particularly the really important actors here who are congressional Republicans. So in some ways, I see this as of a piece of all the other kinds of evidence that came out over the last couple of months. And in other ways, it does seem to be received by, particularly in the legal community, as something a little bit different because it's clear-cut what happened, even though it's not necessarily clear-cut how it fits into the bigger picture.
Yeah, and I don't mean to put you into a box here, but I asked the question, is this a smoking gun or a big nothing burger? How would you answer that question? Which one, or is it somewhere in between?
I said earlier in the week to some colleagues, I feel like what we keep getting are sort of a series of warm guns, with apologies to John Lennon. As the story unfolded, to me it seems like it's a little bit more smoking in terms of, as I said, it's fairly clear cut what happened in this particular incident. And so in that sense, it's a smoking gun. When we ask the question, is something a smoking gun? It's, to me, that question is this circumstantial evidence that suggests what might have happened, or is this a story that tells us what did happen? I think, you know, what it doesn't exactly tell us is was this part of a more concerted collusion effort with policy, you know, with policy promises being made on behalf of the Russian government in that collusion? You know, that is really kind of the spirit of this concern. And that, you know, when we hear, if we take the statements of the president's son at face value, it sounds more like campaign incompetence, right? Someone who hasn't worked on a national campaign, isn't familiar with norms or the ins and outs of campaign finance law. And so then it becomes a judgment call about what the broader significance is. But I will say, you know, as more and more of what I'm reading left, right, and center from people who are legal experts, political experts, I think there's relatively few people in that world who see this as a nothing burger, that as previous said, these rules and laws about how campaigns unfold and the norms that we have about communicating with a foreign power during the course of a domestic election campaign, these exist for a reason, and I think people take that reason seriously.
Here's California Congressman Adam Schiff, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, telling reporters yesterday that Trump Jr. erred by not going to authorities. Let's take a listen.
It is absolutely not only a breach of norms, but a breach of civic responsibility to the country. If you get approached by a foreign government offering to interfere in a presidential election, you go to the FBI. You report it. That's what a decent citizen would do. And I don't want to see us continue to lower the bar here and say the only question is whether this is illegal. This was unethical.
So he's saying it may not have been illegal, but it was unethical that Trump Jr., when approached, that the Russian attorney had some dirt on Hillary Clinton, should have gone to authorities right then and there. What's your take on that?
So, and that seems to be a broad take, and I've seen bipartisan nods to that as well, kind of scrolling through on Twitter, that's the basic idea. Stuart Stevens, I believe, was a Republican strategist, was also saying that on Twitter, retweeting that sentiment. You know, I think that these things are important, and the idea that people in both parties would share some basic ideas about the rules of the game and the norms and the ethics of the game is kind of the glue that holds politics together. You know, I think that's pretty important. None of that is to deny that campaigns are messy and not always ethical, and also that, you know, there's something different about this administration. I think it's important that he mentioned the lowering of the bar. One of the key themes that has come out of this presidency is people saying, well, they're new at this. You know, they haven't had a chance to really learn how all of this works. And I think that, you know, this is sort of making the case for political expertise, for people that know how things work.
Yeah, White House aide Sebastian Gorka said yesterday that getting dirt on your opponent is what political campaigns do. And even Trump Jr. was saying that in his emails that he was eager, he was excited to get some dirt on Hillary Clinton. What do you say to that argument that this is just basic mm-hmm. politics? You know, this opposition research is the way campaigns are run.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I have never worked on an opposition research team, so I don't know the deep secrets of that kind of practice. But I do think that in politics in general, you have to, when you're thinking about who you're getting help from, you have to think about how that makes you indebted to someone in the future. That's where political parties are very useful, right? You have a group of people that are all on the same team, and they're indebted to one another for campaign help, essentially. And then they know, like, everyone sort of knows what the implications of that are, right? I take help from this person's going to campaign for me in Missouri, then I'm going to help push their agricultural bill.
Uh-oh, I think that we're going to be experiencing maybe weather-related, I'm not sure, but we're having some telephone drop-offs. So we will, what we'll do is we'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and maybe we'll check back with our guest to make sure that we have a good connection with her. And then we will take your calls after news. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What is your reaction to this Donald Trump Jr. meeting with the Russian lawyer story? And do you think that this is a big deal or not? Do you think that it is a big nothing burger or evidence of collusion? We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with our guest political analyst about the news about President Donald Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., meeting with a Russian lawyer last summer during the campaign. We are talking about whether this is a big deal or not, whether this is evidence of collusion between the campaign and the Russian government or not. Or whether this is much to do about nothing. We are talking with Julia Azari, who is an associate professor and assistant chair in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. We're welcoming your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Professor Azari, just before news time, we lost our connection with you, and you were talking about those who say, including Adam Schiff, who is the ranking Democrat who's investigating this, he said that what Donald Trump Jr. did was not necessarily illegal, and a lot of people say it wasn't necessarily illegal, but it was unethical, and you were responding.
Yeah, so I think, a couple things there. One is that much of the legal expertise that I've read quoted in the last day or so does suggest that this violated campaign finance law, and there were some dissenting views on that. People that said, so the campaign finance law is written, it says you can't accept something of value from a foreign government or foreign national, and there were a couple of people that said, well, was this really something of value? And it's not clear what happened in the meeting, but it wasn't a direct campaign contribution. But my point about how campaign help works and about owing favors in politics is a lot of our campaign finance law is written not only to avoid actually owing, inappropriate owingness, inappropriately being indebted to one entity or another, but also the appearance of that, right? A lot of campaign finance law is written to avoid the appearance of that kind of corruption, that idea that you're on the hook to provide something to a foreign government or to some other, inappropriate source. So I think that's really a concern, and that's a concern a lot of people have raised in the context of the policy and international relationship that we have with Russia.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said yesterday that Trump Jr.'s emails were disturbing, the emails saying that he was excited to get some dirt on Hillary Clinton. He said that those emails were disturbing and that when you're in a campaign and you get an offer from a foreign government to help you win, you should just say no. But then he also said this. Let's take a listen.
Here's the question. Why would they send the Trump campaign to a lady who knew nothing? So I want to know about that, too. It's kind of an odd way to suggest the Russian government wants to help by sending you to somebody that doesn't have any evidence at all.
Yeah, so the Russian attorney apparently wanted to talk about, at least the beginning of the meeting was about, Russian adoption policy to try to, I guess, change the policy of U.S. Ban on Russian adoptions. So did that lady not know anything at all?
I mean, I don't know anything that that you all don't know about that meeting or that situation.
Right.
It's very, you know, it's very strange. I haven't really been able to figure out what might have actually happened there. One story that is floating around has to do with the British publicist who apparently brokered this meeting with Rob Goldstone, which suggests that maybe he had overblown what was possible in this meeting, and then that was the source of that disconnection. But you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what happened, and like I said, I haven't had a chance to really fully imagine it either.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are also, though, pointing to it wasn't just Donald Trump Jr. It was Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort, the at the time campaign director. So this wasn't just some novice who, you know, doesn't know about campaigns. At least one person there knew a lot about campaigns.
Right. And that's the other thing that I think is really, you know, cause for concern is the idea that lots of other people knew about this, including possibly the president. There hasn't been any conclusive evidence that was the case, but you know, I think Evan McMullen just tweeted about that. So people, that's an area of concern or suspicion. Is the question of, you know, what if Donald Trump Jr. was doing this in the context of the campaign? Why didn't someone who knew about campaigns tell him that this was unethical, illegal, or at the very least, you know, likely to be revealed and likely to reflect poorly later on?
Yeah. President Trump hasn't said a whole lot since the story broke, though in a statement read by Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Trump said his son is a high-quality person and that he applauds his transparency. What do you make of Trump Jr. releasing this entire email chain that led to the meeting?
So that's interesting, too. You know, he's used that language also of being transparent. And the response seems to have been, well, you've just released a smoking gun that incriminates yourself and also incriminates the people to whom you forwarded those emails. And that pretty much, I mean, that to me seems to be the main dominant interpretation of that is, you know, that's what he did there. And so maybe he thought, having heard this wisdom in Washington, we've heard a lot about, right, that it's not the crime, it's the cover up. Maybe that seems strategic to not try to cover it up any further. And you know, maybe from a strategic perspective, that's correct, because in order for anything to really happen, in order for anything to happen to the administration, Congress has to move, right? There's no automatic process by which we punish wrongdoing if, in fact, that's what happened. Congress has to do it. And so, you know, if it is all kind of out there, then maybe politically that's how you get the news cycle to kind of address it all at once and then move on. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's right. That seems to be how this has worked so far.
Lawmakers are calling for Trump Jr. to testify before Congress as soon as possible. We'll see what happens there. Kenneth in Janesville is our first caller. We'll get to calls now. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. Joy, you said we haven't heard much from the president. Well, the president hasn't done anything for the last 3 days. Nothing for our country, just sat in his office. Brooding, what's the word has not been said is it's treason. I mean, the rule is written that no foreign person can give any information to candidates. You know, and what is it going to say? Is it bad information? No, any information of use or value, Russia is an enemy, and there is no consciousness of that.
Yeah, well, that point has been made by some who are being who are talking about this. That this isn't just some opposition research dug up by some investigative, you know, reporter or something. This is the Russian government, an adversary of the United States, saying, "Hey, we've got some." we've got some dirt on your opponent, and we want to help you out. So does that make it different that this was the Russian government claiming it had information that would help the Trump campaign?
So I actually think, based on what I've read, I think it's important in some ways to kind of lump all foreign governments into a single category as we're applying this law as it's written, and to suggest that it's not appropriate to make yourself beholden to any foreign government in a campaign context. And I think, you know, I have heard people use the word treason. Certainly that narrative is out there, and perhaps it's appropriate. My personal approach to this when I'm on live radio is there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of inflammatory language, so I'm trying to really base things in what I've read and the expertise that I've seen. And one of my favorite legal experts, who I think is really detailed and measured in her responses, is Dahlia Lithwick on Slate. And her take was that, you know, we ought to really focus on this very clear campaign finance law violation. It's a legal violation, as opposed to this larger question about treason. But I do think that what the caller brings up that's important is that there is a little bit of a fuzzy line there, where if you're making yourself indebted to a foreign government in a campaign context, that does call into some question what kind of loyalty and what kind of favors are at the center of that, or might be involved in that down the line. So I think that's, you know, I don't want to close the door on that word, but also I don't want to immediately jump into the most, the most inflammatory frame that I can think of.
John in Camp Douglas is with us. Hi, John.
Yeah, I guess just real quick on that, if the appearance of indebtedness is a problem, then every American citizen should thank God Hillary's not president, because her Clinton slush fund would have had all kinds of indebtedness because she was getting money for nothing, allegedly. But the bigger point, I guess, is that this is just a giant waste of taxpayer time and money. If he didn't get anything, he doesn't have to report anything to the FEC. And I think we should focus more on the known collusion that we've seen, you know, whether it's Obama interfering in Israel's election or the DNC, you know, colluding to fix their primary.
Yeah, John, I'm just curious why you say it's a big waste of money. It's being investigated. You don't think that it should? There's even a hint that there's anything to investigate here?
I think if it takes them over a year to just find this one string of emails, that's a giant waste of taxpayer money.
Yeah, and meeting with this Russian attorney who said she had dirt on the Clinton campaign, that doesn't matter to you.
I think whether it was Trump who ended up against Hillary or Cruz or any of the Republicans, the people who didn't vote for her in the swing states wouldn't have voted for her regardless of the opponent. So
yeah,
I think so, that's relevant.
So a Trump supporter saying that this is a waste of time and money, Professor Azaria. What do you make of that?
Well, you do hear that argument, and you know, we've heard that argument every time there's a major presidential scandal of either party. You hear that argument. You know, I remember that distinctly from the Clinton impeachment years. That was certainly something that was said around Watergate. Nixon was fond of saying, people just don't want to accept that I won and my agenda, I have a mandate for my agenda, and would kind of bring it back to that. So, I mean, that is a judgment call. There are costs to doing these kinds of investigations, and if you think that there's enough there to spend time on that, then, you know, that's a political opinion, obviously, and these are always filtered through partisanship. One of the things I found in studying impeachment and other scandals is that the partisanship, the strength of partisanship, really affects how members of Congress act, and it certainly affects how members of the public perceive these events. So obviously that trade-off is there. We can't pretend that it's not. But I do think that there's, you know, if we're going to put it in those terms, then this is an incredibly divided country, and people would have been deeply unhappy with either outcome. A number of people would have been deeply unhappy with either outcome and would have been interested in looking for potential wrongdoing. I have no doubt we'd be having some version of a conversation about things Hillary Clinton may or may not have done. I don't know what, if she had been elected. So that, you know, that's right. Again, I guess my point is this is a political trade-off, and there's enough people in the country that are unhappy with the president or that are concerned about him that seems to be the trade-off we're making. That's my analysis of that.
Maybe it's too early to say, but do you think that this story with Trump Jr. Meeting with the Russian attorney is going to be any kind of a political game changer or not?
I mean, I think my sense of this is that the major revelations in the course of this story, or the major events like the Comey firing, are these sort of, they're sort of game redirectors, but nothing fundamentally changes. And that was the case during the campaign too, with various revelations about Trump and to an extent Clinton also. You know, people learned things they didn't like, but generally everybody kind of came back to their partisanship. And for something to change that calculus, I think it's going to have to be, I don't know what it's going to have to be, because the people that side with the president, that support him, continue to do so in Congress and in the electorate, and the people that don't continue not to. You know, he hasn't really won any converts, but he hasn't lost that many either. That I think those forces are really strong. And so for me, I guess people keep saying this next thing is going to be a game changer, and I don't see it.
Yeah, there haven't been any. I just very briefly, since we have news coming up, since you brought up, mentioned former FBI Director James Comey, on Monday, Trump accused Comey of having illegally leaked classified material. Apparently, there's a report that more than half of the memos that Comey wrote about Russia-related conversations with Trump contained such information. The leak of this material prompted Trump to tweet, "That is so illegal." Do you expect anything to come of that?
It seems like probably not at this point. It seems to have been buried, as most things have, in this story. We will see how that all unfolds. I think that's probably been one of the more, in some ways, one of the more unexpected, one of the more interesting stories of 2017. Comey, who is, you know, hated by Democrats for releasing that letter in October, then becomes, enters in this more adversarial relationship with the administration. One thing I am noticing that I'm not really sure if this is going to be true in the future or not, but it's sort of a soft observation, is that the president's tweets and statements are important, but they're starting to kind of fall off of the, you know, they're starting to fall away from the central public agenda, that the president has made so many different kinds of statements, and, you know, has been so vocal in certain ways. It seems like maybe each thing that he says is no longer a distinct news story.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in because we do have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking about this Donald Trump Jr. Meeting with the Russian attorney, and we'll talk some about whether President Trump's agenda can advance with all this going on after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. President Donald Trump is defending his son, Donald Trump Jr., for his transparency in releasing his emails about a meeting with a Russian lawyer last summer during the campaign. Meanwhile, lawmakers are calling for Trump Jr. to testify before Congress as soon as possible. We are talking with our guest political analyst about whether this is a political game changer or not. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Julia Azari, who is an associate professor and assistant chair in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. Donald Trump Jr. is speaking out about his meeting with that Russian attorney during the campaign. He says he did not tell his father about this meeting because he didn't think it was significant. During an interview on Sean Hannity's show on Fox News last night, he also said that in retrospect, he might do things differently. And he also said that if he was given any information on Hillary Clinton that was damaging, any information that the Russian government had obtained, he would have brought that information to authorities. Let's take a listen.
If the meeting resulted in information that you felt in any way was illegal, mm-hmm, or compromising or collusion, to use the media's term,
I said it earlier, 100% I would bring it to the proper authorities. So there's nothing that I would do to ever endanger this country. I think the reason we fought so hard during this campaign, whether it was my father and the work that he put into it, whether it was the rest of our family and the efforts that we put into it, and you know those efforts well, it's because we'd do anything for this country. So we're never going to put that in jeopardy.
So what do you think of that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Tony called in but couldn't stay with us over the news, and he was refuting another caller who said that this whole investigation was a waste of taxpayer money. He thinks it is worth it to investigate whether the amount of Russian meddling in our democracy and whether or not the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians, because he said it is an attack on our democracy. Professor Azari, we also hear people say, hey, the U.S. interferes in other countries' elections all the time. How big of a deal is it that that our intelligence agencies think that that Russia did indeed meddle in the election, tried to change the election, tried to hurt Hillary Clinton and help Donald Trump? And how big of a deal is that?
So I think there's two distinct questions here, and I think they're both important. And one is how much did Russia try to meddle in the election? And there's some pretty decisive evidence that that they did. And I think that is a big deal. That's something that should be taken seriously and should be put in the larger context of election integrity and security in general. And you know, how far are we willing to go, or what kind of trade-offs are we willing to make to secure that, versus treating elections as these really big, complicated events where things happen and there's a lot at stake, and different people will try to influence the outcome. I think those are big questions to wrestle with. And as we're finding in other areas of election integrity, there are some pretty deep disagreements about how to secure voting rolls, how to clean up voting rolls, how to make sure. Whoops, I'm so sorry. Now there's noises coming out of my computer. How to make sure that everyone who is eligible to vote can vote. Like, I think it's part of that bigger question. But the other question is, did the current administration collude with a foreign power that was trying to meddle in our election? Right. Right? To me, that is a much bigger question. As I said, elections are very complicated events. Trying to make them completely perfect and secure is really challenging. I don't think people want to admit that, but I think it's true. On the other hand, it is not that hard to have campaigns that broadly understand the rules.
Yeah. And there are investigations underway, congressional committees investigating and the special prosecutor investigating the whole situation, including whether there was collusion, to use, as Sean Hannity said, the media's term, between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. That there's a lot of people on Facebook saying this is, you know, the fake news media is just trying to find this collusion. I mean, it's not just the fake news media, is it?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, this is a heated moment of media credibility. I think that there are a number of pretty reputable places, and all across the ideological spectrum. I think you will find reporting on this in the Wall Street Journal and in the National Review, as well as in the New York Times or places with more left-leaning editorial pages, who are starting to take this really seriously. You know, it's possible that there's a huge coordinated conspiracy across all these different media outlets, but it seems unlikely. We're dealing in probabilities. And as I said, people all across the political spectrum are starting to take these things very seriously. And Donald Trump Jr. himself tweeted the primary documents. So mm-hmm. They're out there for everyone to interpret.
Dave in Menominee, Michigan is with us now. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I wanted to bring up how, you know, the public and private, a lot of the ethics of these guys who are from the private world have really kind of exposed themselves. To think that they've forgot about these meetings, how many of these guys forgot about all these meetings with the Russians, especially this government lawyer who showed up with a translator, you know, in the height of this election, Manafort and Kushner were there. This was like a Hail Mary pass, and it's a big pattern, I think, that we have. It's a micro and macro. I mean, we got a pattern here with this election, and we have a pattern from other Republicans using foreign governments to win elections. Richard Nixon as a candidate.
I'm not sure we can jump into Nixon's campaign right now, but I do, Dave, appreciate the call, because what about... What about the forgetting all these meetings with various Russian officials, Professor Azari?
That's an interesting phenomenon that's come out of this, and I can't really comment on the quality of other people's memory. But I do think that the caller brings up an important point about the sort of the public-private connection there, mm-hmm. which is the other issue is. A series of questions around business interests in this administration, and those, you know, if we take it seriously that everyone who represents the United States, Republican, Democrat, whatever, has certain obligations to be, you know, public-minded and public-facing and meet not just minimal legal and ethical standards, but very high legal and ethical standards, then these are the questions we ought to be asking, and hopefully we'd also ask some of a Democratic administration, but that's not what we are, you know, that's not what we have right now.
Dave in La Crosse is with us. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you? What would you like to ask?
Well, I was wondering, I have a 9-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 15-year-old, and I was wondering that with the denigration of the Office of the President of the United States, what we're supposed to tell our children about holding them accountable when people directly involved, including the president and his minions, with them, their lack of responsibility and accountability and their refusal to disclose all these things and continue to lie and lie and lie.
Well, I'm going to jump in because that's not what Dave said he was going to ask about, but I guess you want to handle that. What should Dave tell his kids when he thinks that, what he thinks that our top government officials are not telling the truth?
Well, if you're looking for parenting advice, I'm going to be really far down the list of people you want to ask. But you know, but I have a lot of friends that have kids, and I feel like we've actually had this conversation pretty recently. And for people that are really frustrated with what the president seems to be doing. And one thing I think is kind of interesting is you can point to the fact that when if these things are indeed happening, if there's dishonesty or whatever, that it has really big consequences for other people.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I think that's if I were asked by someone of those ages, that's what I would say as well. When you know, if you do something that you shouldn't do, it has really big consequences for people around you, and it's a really serious thing.
So How difficult is it going to be for President Trump and the administration to advance the agenda with this continuing Russia story in the background?
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a challenge, no question. It's an obstacle, no question. And yesterday, as this was unfolding, Mitch McConnell announced that the Senate would work through the recess or 2 weeks of the August recess. So, you know, I think that's right. I also think that we're seeing a lot of evidence that the legislative agenda has its own challenges, right? It has challenges on its own in terms of building a coalition for a new policy that is workable. So I think part of it is the legislation itself, but this surely isn't going to help.
Yeah, and in our final minute, the stories about the Russia investigation are not going away anytime soon, are they?
I don't think so. I think that we are, you know, we are right in the middle of it.
Thank you very much for being with us. Julia Azari is an associate professor and assistant chair in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. Her areas of research include the American presidency, political parties, and political rhetoric. She is a regular contributor to Vox's Mischiefs of Faction blog and 538.com. She is the author of Delivering the People's Message, The Changing Politics of the Presidential Mandate. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Brianne Chasso for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We are going to talk about the impact of Bob Marley's music coming up in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.